It's quite ironic to hear Newcastle fans moan about VAR after giving Arsenal a load of shit for moaning about VAR the other week, so.
At the 26-yard line. Henry, running lane. Henry! Turning on the speed, Derrick Henry! Stiff arm! Henry, another! Oh, he's done it again! Oh, Henry! Touchdown, Titans! You knew it was coming.
Blitz coming. Mariota throws in the end zone. Man is there. Touchdown, Titans! Corey Davis, his first ever touchdown catch at Nissan Stadium. That's why you pick him. That's why you want him. And that's why Marcus Mariota is the man.
Welcome to the Transatlantic Titans podcast, coming at you later in the week than usual, but lives get in the way sometimes. This is Adam. I'm here with Greg. Hello to you, Greg.
Hello. Good to be back.
Yeah, well, I guess it is. You virtually live in America these days. So does it feel like a holiday when you come to England?
Yeah, no, I mean, I wish I did live over there sometimes, but it's been, like I say, I went back to work on yesterday, Wednesday. See, I'm still jet lagged. I have no idea what the day is. Went back to work on Wednesday, and yeah, I'm one of those, that gif where you're just throwing paper around everywhere because you just like don't want to be back. I just want to be on holiday still. But it's good to be back on the podcast. I can't say it's good to be back in England, but it's good to be back on the podcast.
Did your work know who you were? Do they remember you?
I had to show them ID, prove that I still worked there. No, I was only away for 2.5 weeks, so it just coincided to miss about 3 podcasts. But I'm sure the listeners are happy with 3 weeks rest anyway.
You managed to catch 3 games while you were away, which is pretty good going for 2.5 weeks. 2 of which in Florida. Firstly, how is in parentheses, that's not the right word, inverted commas, Florida man, how's he doing?
good. The two games in Florida, I've got quite a bad sunburn and 2 really bad defeats, so won't be rushing back to Jacksonville anytime soon, but I think I kind of knew that before I'd even got there. But no,
was that,
honestly,
was that the first? Was that your first game in Jacksonville?
Jacksonville, yeah. I've been to Tampa before, and not to watch the Titans. It was a Monday night game against the Saints. It's worse places to watch football weather wise. I mean,
sure, yeah,
sitting in a freezing cold stadium like Lambeau or somewhere like that. But makes getting absolutely battered a bit easier when it's 30 degrees and sunny and but. No, it was, yeah, like, I mean, you've already spoken about those games, so we won't go for them again. But let's talk about the third game, one where we actually
actually talk about a win, which makes it even weirder that we've managed to leave it till Thursday to get together. But I think you were jet lag / traveling back Tuesday, so it worked out well. I say a win, if winning's what we want. I mean, I always want to win every game, and it was, I say, not the sort of win you get that excited to get about against the Carolina Panthers, but a win's a win. It was a comfortable win, despite not scoring a point in the second half. I never thought we weren't going to win. Just the Panthers were so anemic, really. It just felt that we were always going to have enough and just took our foot off the gas, which was a shame because I think we actually looked relatively decent offensively in the first half, or at least mix it up a bit. Will Levis showing a bit of what he could do, and then we just decided to kind of stop playing in the second half, which is our want these days. So I kind of wanted to just see a bit more of what we'd seen. Derrick Henry remembers how to score touchdowns. He might not be producing those lengthy 80, 90 yard touchdowns anymore, but he certainly knows what to do in the red zone. He looked good. But yeah, it's nothing. It's not going to be one that lives in the memory for years, is it? But how was the Nissan on Sunday, atmosphere wise?
Before the game, there was I met with a few friends who had travelled over from the UK as well, and a couple of friends from the US who we've seen at games many times. It felt just flat, and it felt like not surprisingly flat. I mean, let's face it, the team isn't performing particularly well at the moment, so no one's expecting it to be bouncing down there. There was the parking lot that is there normally full an hour before the game. There seemed to be loads of spaces. It just didn't seem to be the same. That said, when the game came along, it still got pretty loud on third downs. There's still, there was still a decent support in the stadium. The sort of top sections were definitely quieter than they normally were. But all in all, it was kind of what you would expect to see. On the field, two pretty poor teams playing out a pretty poor game, if I'm honest with you. First half, yeah, I agree with you. Offensively, we did all right in the first half. I think at halftime, we were all thinking that this could be the game where we go and break that 30 mark that we've been waiting so long for, because we looked comfortable. But then in the second half, we just didn't seem to be able to string any real drive together. And penalties really just kept costing us on both sides of the ball, to be honest with you. I think the Panthers scoring what they scored came down to a lot of penalties, and some of them were probably soft and not particularly... I thought some of the refereeing decisions on Sunday weren't particularly great, but some of them were just stupidity from us. So it just felt a bit... Go on.
You've just poked the bear with this refereeing thing and the flags. It felt that by complete coincidence, all the defensive penalties happened to be on key third downs when we got a stop.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there was a hold in that. Let's chuck a really late flag. There was one that we never saw a replay of. The refs called it as number 19, who I'm reliably informed doesn't exist on either side of the ball. Short of calling up Justin McCarron's from the 2008 practice squad. That was baffling. Never saw a replay or any evidence of what on earth that was going to be. But there were a few like that. There were a few as well that we were guilty as charged.
Yeah, absolutely. There was definitely a few penalties that I was baffled about. The hit on Spears, then picking up the flag for that. Also, at the time, I haven't actually watched the game back, because I don't really want to put myself through it again. But it's one of those ones where at the time it felt like it was a really late and dirty hit. They threw the flag initially, but then they ended up picking it up completely. Which, considering what the league's all about when it comes to player safety, is just absolutely baffled me at the time. So I read somewhere
What I found odd about that was the fact, not that I think if the flag was never thrown, I'd have been all right with it. It was the fact that it was, and they had a discussion about it, and then they decided that it was okay. It's one of those things, as soon as a flag is thrown or it gets debated and you start looking at slow motion replays, it always looks bad and it always looks like the defensive player is culpable. I don't think it was particularly dirty. So maybe it was the right call, but how they got there just felt weird to me. It's like once that flag's on the turf, they kind of stick generally.
Yeah, it was just there's so many penalties out there that just felt just kind of dumb. Like, I mean, Fulton on a couple of occasions, just you know they're going to throw the flag for if you're holding on to a receiver.
Holding when the quarterback's only looking the other side of the field as well. There were a couple of them when he's just...
Yeah, and it just felt like that drive that where they scored in the second half, there were so many opportunities in that drive to take them off the field. And it felt like most of the time it was penalties that was costing us. And in the end, them getting into the end zone, not that it mattered in the end, but it was a seven-point game that should never have been a seven-point game. I mean... Offensively in the second half, we just couldn't get anything going. It was down to penalties as well. I think it was Raiden's had a a full start on, was it third and five, that ended up coming like third and 10, and you just can't go third and longs with this offense at the moment. It just doesn't work. It just wasn't great. But I think it was some of the positives were, I liked what I saw from Jalen Duncan. I know it's a low bar with this O-line, but I think what we saw from him was, in my view, from a lot better than what I've seen from Dillard this year. And like I say, it is a low bar. I'm not saying he's the answer to playing tackle for the future, but yeah, I definitely felt a lot more comfortable with him in that position.
He could be Raiden's, a swing tackle going forward quite easily, couldn't he?
Yeah. Or
something useful to the team. And I agree with you.
I don't think he's the answer to all of our problems by any stretch, but he definitely showed more than what I've seen from others in that position. But that whole O-line just needs overhauling. There's not one player in that line right now that...
Well, Skoronski.
Skoronski, yeah, sorry. Skoronski
aside. Maybe he's in the wrong position, which we've debated.
Yeah, well, but I just don't see them making that change, though. I think he will be... I think he will 100% stay in that guard position. That seems to be where they want to keep him. If they ever had a plan to give him a shot at tackle, they would have done it. I think with all the changes that had happened, they clearly see him as that all pro guard, and that's still going to baffle me forevermore with the pick that we took with him. But I just think the rest of that O line, even the likes of Brunskill, who I was hoping for sort of big things from, hasn't really impressed me. He's had injury problems as well. I know Brewer at center he's a downgrade on Ben Jones, but we all know how good Ben Jones was over the years. But his snaps have not been great. I don't think he's been great from a blocking perspective either. The whole O-line could be overhauled. Build it around Skoronski. And I know a lot of people would rather us go with a flashy first-round pick if we end up getting a really high pick. But for me, go and get the best tackle you can go and find, because we were very, very fortunate for many, many years with Taylor Lewan to have a mainstay at left tackle. And it's showing now. We don't have that. And it has shown over the last couple of years just how important that position is.
Yeah, it's not fashionable. That's exactly where I'm at as well. In fact, trade back and get multiple tackles. Just stack up on offensive linemen, because that's the big area of need, both sides of the ball. And so if we think we've got a quarterback of the future, and there's no reason not to think that, then that's where the focus should be. If Will Levis is struggling for any reason, it's that. Because he certainly showed signs that he can deliver when he's got time. He can make some what look like quite difficult throws. I know it's still a small sample size, and that was what frustrated me in that second half. I wanted to see more of it. I wanted to see more of him throwing the ball down the field. But I think we struggled, but I don't know if some of it was deliberate. I'm not saying it's we tanked the second half, because we're probably always going to win the game anyway, but I don't know. I don't see... It just felt a bit like, well, a bit like a lot of our games have in the past couple of years, where we just do the bare minimum. Sometimes the bare minimum doesn't prove to be enough. It did prove to be enough there. The Panthers, after that first drive in the third quarter, weren't ever looking like scoring again. Defensively, we looked better up front, but partly, I suspect, because of what we were facing.
Yeah, that O-line, their O-line.
Exactly. And so, yeah, big Jeff, Autry, Landry, Tier Tart are going to look good against that. They'll probably look good against our O-line, let's face it. But that is good to see all the same. And I think seeing them terrorise someone else is what we want to see. We haven't seen it enough. I'd love to see that against the Colts this coming week, but I suspect it will be harder against that offensive line. I mean, the Bucks didn't cause them anywhere near as much grief as they caused us with their pass rush, such that it is. So that is perhaps a worrying sign, but we'll get to that. Depends how much we're worried about winning at the moment. and the heart wants to win, but maybe as we've touched on in recent weeks, it's not in the best interests of this team going forward. But it is the Colts.
Yeah. I mean, I'm definitely never. We've got quite a few divisional games to play. Is it six still to play?
No. Well, yeah, four.
Four.
Six all year.
Six all year. Six games left for the original. That's all right. Sorry.
Maths, ladies and gentlemen. Maths. In your ears.
I'm still in a different time zone, let alone anything else. But the I just don't. I don't want to lose any of those divisional games because it's not nice losing to the Colts, regardless of whether your team is bad or not. But it is. It's definitely a feeling for me with the number of home games that we've got at the end of this year. There's no benefit us winning several games and going 7-10. I just don't see where that benefit is. You're never making the playoffs. If you genuinely think this team can go and make a run and basically win out the season and potentially nick a wild card spot, I don't even think potentially winning out might not even be enough with the way that the division is going this year. Obviously, the Jags are miles ahead, and they'll still win plenty of games for now and the end of the season. And then, you know, the Texans also looking half decent. Similar story, right? They'll win some more games this year. So I think there's no benefit to trying to win out in that regard, because I just don't think it would happen regardless. So you've got to look forward, and the draft is not necessarily about getting a top five pick to use that pick. I think, like Hugh said, it's about accumulating other picks, because I can't remember exactly how many picks we've got now. I know we gathered a couple with Bayard, but they're like later round picks. You know, I think we need to go out and rebuild this team in the right way. And I don't think there's many offensive lines in this league right now that are great, and certainly not from a free agency perspective. I don't think you're going to go and find your tackle of the future. So you've got to be looking at the draft for that. You know, you can go and add players in skill positions, you know, the likes of Higgins, for example, from Cincinnati, I wouldn't be against. He's also injury prone, certainly has been this year anyway, so he'll fit right.
Perfect fit, yeah.
it's a really odd place to be, because I'm like you, every Sunday I'm still going to get pissed off when, you know, Gardner Minshew goes and throws a 50-yard bomb down the field and Christian Fulton's 20 yards away from his nearest receiver. I'm still going to get annoyed by that, but it's not going to annoy me in the same way as it has done over the last few years or so, because I think in hindsight, we're looking at this in a way of, yeah, let's write this season off. Let's just go and play. Let's see what we've got in some of the younger players, but for sure. I want to see what we've got in Levis, and I want to continue to see that. But behind this O-line, I don't think you're really seeing what Levis has truly got. I mean, you're seeing the basics of what Levis can offer you, but you're not seeing how good he could be. You're not going to see that until they fix that O-line, which hopefully is going to be next season. I just hope that by the end of this year that they have been able to see enough that Levis is the guy to move forward, because we talked about this weeks ago. If he's not, you know, you need to get that position fixed as well, because you're not going to keep Tannehill. I think next year is going to be Levis regardless. If he's not the right guy.
You may not agree with me. Am I thinking on my feet here? I think I'm prepared to make that call. Because what's the alternative? Like, he first played against Atlanta in that game, and he looked incredible. And he's played, what is it, four games now, I think, including that one, maybe five. And he's looked like he hasn't done much wrong since. I think he's not really had much of a chance to do much at some of these games. Been running for his life a little bit, had to make a lot of quick throws to beat the pass rush. But he's largely made good decisions. And when he hasn't, he seems to have corrected them. And he seems to Like, physically, he has the tools, I think. So I kind of think, what's the alternative at this point? What do we say? Well, he might be the guy, and we dither, and we don't make a decision. We go into the off season, no different to a year ago, except Tannehill's a year older and on his way out, probably. I can't bear the thought of trying to find somebody else, of a quarterback in the draft at this point, because if you go look, if you're in a situation where you go looking for one, that takes up so much of your capital, even if it's just one pick, it takes away so many other options. I just think where we are as a roster, there's so much that needs improving. I'm happy to kind of take that risk. And if a couple more years down the line, he really isn't the guy, fine, you start again. But we've got to start with something and go somewhere with this. We know it's not Willis. We absolutely know that. I think it might be Levis. And I certainly don't know that it's not. I don't know if that's a double negative or a triple negative. It may not be right, but hopefully you get the gist of what I mean.
I'm very much on, like, the Atlanta game aside, where, you know, I mean, that was just, you know, we went off that day almost. That game aside, Sunday was the highest number of points we scored in a game. Now, a lot of this is down to the offensive line. We all know that. That's why we've been harping on about it for.
I would add coaching, play calling, decision making to that.
No, agree. Yeah, agree. Coaching. You know, I've been very critical of from the coaching side, and you know, I tweeted the other week, even when it comes to Mike Vrabel, that I would take the decision of coaching away from him. I want Mike Vrabel to be our head coach going forward, but I don't trust that guy to actually bring in coaches that are gonna make a difference with this team. So I think next year, go and sort out your offensive line in the draft. Go and add a free agency weapon in the receiver core. There's still, I mean, let's not forget, we've still got gaps in the defensive side of things, but, you know, certainly in the secondary that we need to fill as well. So there's going to be a lot of work that Rand will need to do next offseason. But for me, one of the highest priorities is go and overhaul that coaching side of things. I don't think any of the coordinators we've got, either Bowen or Kelly, are the level they need to be. I think Bowen got very much covered by Schwartz. You know, if he's gone back to the Bowen that we saw prior to Schwartz coming in, you know, I would go out and go and get yourself an experienced defensive coordinator who can actually go and run that defense. By all means, Vrabel can be the head coach, and I'd be happy if he was. But if he's not happy with that, then I'd also cut our losses on him and move on, because, you know, we've done it before with Munchak, we've done it before with Malarkey, and I don't think Amy would be afraid to do that again. But she seems, or not just she, I think the organisation seems to think that Vrabel is the man, and they don't seem to be putting a lot of it down to coaching. I think they see it more as a roster issue, and they see it more as a talent issue, which, you know, and they're not wrong in, but I think it's a combination of the two.
I think it's all of it.
Yeah, it is. It absolutely is. But I don't want to do is go and fix the roster and then still have, you know, completely inept coaches and coordinators leading a capable roster next year, because I don't think that's going to be the answer to everything. I think you have to fix both sides.
To put the logic that I can put to this is the fact that I don't think this roster is as significantly worse. Like, so comparing this with 2 or 3 years ago, where we were manufacturing wins. 2020 is maybe the best comparison here under Vrabel, where we had, I would say, a substandard defense. So really quite a poor defense that particular year. Think Clowney, think Joseph, and a few COVID picks that went wrong. And think of, yeah, the Bowen before Schwartz came and helped for a couple of years. Yeah. And I think we could overcome that with good coaching. The Vrabel's first year, 2018, maybe was a better roster than this one. But we were starting games with Blaine Gabbert when Mariota was hurt. and we were overcoming that. I don't feel that we're overcoming it as much as maybe we could be, as maybe if we had the best coaching staff, the most motivated coaching staff. I still feel Vrabel at his best would get more than 4 wins out of these first 11 games. Just a gut feeling. It's
no, I don't think you're wrong. I think defensively in the secondary, I don't think we're as strong. I mean, Fulton in that first year, that 2020 year, was his rookie year, I think, and he looked good. Obviously, we had Byard, and so he's moved on. But the rest of the corners we had, I'm trying to think who we would have had then. I'm guessing it would have been the likes of Dory Jackson. Was never great.
Probably still kicking around at that point.
Desmond King, was he even there at the time? I'm not sure. But there's players there that I agree.
Our secondary was woeful. It was struggling at that point. Our pass rush was nothing other than Jeff, but a younger Jeff. We just weren't getting any pressure on anyone, and it was
no.
But we were scoring enough points offensively, so things were very different.
I think the offensively we had a, and again it wasn't a great offensive line, but it was a capable offensive line. You know, you had the likes of Jones, Saffold, Luan. I think Nate Davis would have been there at that time. You know, you had Dennis Kelly as your kind of swing tackle. So there were players there that on that offensive line that could go and get that job done and give Derrick Henry opportunities. Watching Derrick even on Sunday, even though he did score those 2 touchdowns, he just looks like he's running into a brick wall. Now, he's definitely lost a step, and I think that we all know that, and we kind of expected that was going to happen. But every single run you see, he's having to run through 10 people to fight for yardage. And it's... I mean, I don't know how he's continuing to do it, let alone anything else. And when there's games that, when games get away from us, the reason we move away from him is because obviously, you know, we don't have time on our side to run the ball. But it's frustrating because he doesn't have the opportunity to really make any kind of impact. But I just think there's so many areas of this team that need to be fixed. And we've got far too many people on this roster right now that are, you know, those sort of guys that I know Vrabel loves to coach the undrafted rookies. And, you know, there are examples of those undrafted rookies that go on and have really good careers. And he was talking about, I heard a quote from him earlier this week around Danico Autry being one of the guys that he obviously has a lot of love and respect for. And he is one of those undrafted guys who's just come in and you know, made himself a very, very good career. But they are like finding a needle in a haystack, and we have, I can't remember exactly.
Good coaches love that sort of thing, though, don't they? I think that's
of course they do, and I understand that completely. But there's far too many examples that, you know, they just don't work out most of the time, and I feel like we've stacked our roster full of those guys, and the guys who are. That our early round picks haven't been at the level they need to be. I mean, look at someone like Raiden's was a second round pick. He was a guy who couldn't even get an opportunity for some time, and is clearly not the level that is needed. I don't think he's the answer to any. He might be one of those ones that could go and play guard and maybe be a better. I don't think he's good enough to be a tackle in this league. But again, maybe that's just. Because of how bad the overall line is, I don't know. But
the best, our best looking linemen are the ones that have played least recently, because their memory of them playing poorly isn't quite there.
No, absolutely. But I think defensively, there's a few areas that we need. Secondary is still an absolute mess. I think you've only really got. I mean, McCreary. If he stays healthy, is not the worst player, but I don't think he's a lockdown corner. Everyone knows my opinion on Fulton. Hooker, I think, is fine at safety, but Molden, I actually think the jury's still out on him. I don't see enough from him sometimes. But the biggest issue I do think we've got is in the linebacking side of things, and especially in the middle linebackers. Elshai is a good player, What he's going to want to get paid next year is going to be very interesting, because even though we've got that cap space, I wouldn't want to overpay him, even though I do like him and I think he's a very good player. But outside of that, in the middle there, you've got Jack Gibbons, who is one of those guys. I think, I'm not sure if he was completely undrafted, but he's certainly one of those sort of guys that is undrafted.
He does a job, but he's not going to be a superstar, is he?
No, exactly that. And you need that inside linebacker position is so important. And Monty Rice is another one who you know was drafted third round, whatever it was, and I don't think we've seen anywhere near what we wanted to see from him. It's probably down to lack of opportunities too. He's not ahead of Al-Shaair or Gibbons in that regard.
We go back to so many years of having Keith Bullock in that position and just enjoying that. I mean, more recently, yeah. Jayon Brown, David Long, who of course looks like he's having a decent season at Miami, because why would anything else happen at this point?
Yeah, David. I said this in the offseason about David Long, that I understood the concern that they obviously had, that they felt he was getting injured too often. But I mean, if they thought about that with the entire roster that we've got now and had last year, you'd be getting rid of everybody. That was always a bit of a weird move for me, because he was an integral part of certainly our run defense. I think we have missed him massively. Miami got an absolute steal there. It was like $5 million for the year or whatever it was. Yeah, we've definitely missed him.
But hey ho, on to Colts week. We're well into Colts week. It is Thursday. We've already had the Britches report. That's how late we are doing this podcast. We are all Navy against Indy. Last couple of home games, I think we've been in the light blue. So there you go. A change is as good as a holiday, as they say. We're not going to be favourites. We're not going to be favourites in many games as it stands. I assume we're not favourites. But it's possible that the Titans could beat this Colts team. It's Gardner Minshew. Gardner Minshew seems to always be irritating. We could, if you get pressure on him, you could get results. It's going to be harder against that Colts O-line, as I touched on. But maybe it's better not to dwell on that and just to chat Colts hate, really. Other games from the past, or I don't know. I popped a couple of questions in Discorner, and frankly, precious little response, Discord. So I need to step it up. The only, well, other than Langers, of course, who suggested we could get Nate is a knob printed on a banner and hung up in Lucas Oil Stadium, which would be wonderful. A friend of the show, enemy of the show, hasn't been on in a while. We used to chat to opposition fans about them, but that was when I made more effort, I guess. But yeah, it's time to find something to be happy about the Indianapolis Colts. We may beat them, we may not. But what about favorite plays or games of all time against them? It's one of those, I think you always think about the Jags division opponents, even the Texans. There are lots of huge, huge games, huge moments that stick in the mind. The Colts, obviously less so. Years of Manning and Luck largely obliterating us and don't help. Going right back though, the Eddie George run in the playoffs obviously sticks in the mind in Indy, 1999 on the road to the Super Bowl. There's that one. And then it's sort of more recent stuff. The last 4 or 5 years, we've generally done pretty well against them. But they've had their carousel of woeful quarterbacks since Luck retired. You know, the Philip Rivers, Jacoby Brissett, Matt Ryan, Carson Wentz. It's been good. And now it's Minshew kind of by accident. I mean, we assume that Anthony Richardson will return next year. Again, I guess he's not unproven like Levis, but he was drafted in the first round, so they're going to stick everything behind developing him. He looked pretty good for a couple of games for what it's worth, but yeah, obviously injured wasn't ideal for them. Yeah, in recent years, the I guess the game that is fondest in the memory is the Molden pick six late in the game where Wentz tried to get out the end zone by throwing with his left arm. Bayard interception in overtime, Randy Bullock sealing the win there. Well, anything else you can think of, Greg? So,
I think it was on the road a couple of years ago, absolutely annihilating them. The Titans team scoring 45 points, which seems alien to me nowadays.
Was it 35 by half time? I think it was.
I'm doubting myself, but wasn't there a kickoff return as well? Might have been from the onside kick, AJ Brown.
Yeah.
Was it that game? Yeah, I seem to remember right. That was right at the end, I think, if I remember says you're right. Or towards the end, anyway. But I think...
I'll tell you something else. Yeah, something else significant about that game. That was Asai Wilson's game. I believe the only snaps he ever took as a Tennessee Titan. One of them fell on his backside. I don't know. I think he could do a job now. Look at what we've had since at that position.
Yeah. Well, yeah. That is every time I think of John Robinson, that I don't know why. There's many other picks that are also horrendous, but that is the one that just does not stop getting out of my brain. That just how big a blow that pick was. It's just... there's some players who, like Farley, for example, who, with the injuries he's had, you know, you can do your homework a bit better. Clearly, he had injury problems coming into the draft, but they went down that route like they did with Simmons, right? Where sometimes it will pay off. And I think Simmons would have been a top 10, maybe even top 5 pick if it wasn't for the injury he had leading into that draft. So I think he thought the lightning would strike twice and we're going to be getting this corner of the future, but with Wilson, it was just nothing. No, it wasn't due of injuries. It was all just attitude, which I can't believe they didn't see. But anyway,
I think that was the COVID draft, wasn't it? And it was you didn't.
It was maybe, yeah. So was the Farley one. So was the Farley one as well. I mean, I'm sure there might have been other bits of homework that they would normally do that they couldn't have done because of COVID. Maybe I don't know, but.
We've said this before. That's where I think it started to go wrong for John Robinson. And I think we made such a hash of that 2020 draft in particular for not dealing with the challenges of COVID very well at all. Other teams managed to draft decent players that year. So there were ways around it.
And I think that's the point. That's where I don't think we can use COVID as an excuse in that regard because... I mean, I'm just literally scrolling through to see who went in the first round that year.
No, I'm not using it as an excuse.
Unless you're the Raiders, who had a horrendous draft that year. But yeah, it's
is that Joe Burrow that just, year, I think.
First. Joe Burrow is number one. Yeah, I mean the Raiders went Henry Ruggs, and David Arnett as well. So yeah, both of them.
You expect it from the Raiders. That's just how it goes over there.
Yeah. I mean, two first round picks and using them on those guys.
Have you got the draft in front of you? Have you got any picks that are around Asai Wilson that are studs? Because I bet there are.
What was Asai Wilson?
I think sort of 29.
20-summer. Yeah. Here, hold on. There he is. So Patrick Queen went at 28, inside linebacker.
Yeah.
Brandon Ayuk, 25. He's done all right. I mean, there's been some poor. I mean, Jordan Brooks is not a bad player, 27.
There you go. Players that are still in the NFL were drafted around him.
Yeah.
Imagine that.
I mean, in the second round, you've got T. Higgins, Michael Pittman, you've got DeAndre Swift, Jonathan Taylor. I mean, these are all second round picks. I don't know. I mean, we all know the draft is an absolute crapshoot, but I just don't think you have to hit more than you miss with first round picks. Otherwise, you're going to lose your job. And that's exactly what happened with him, as we know. But That's not what we were talking about. We were talking about Colts game and Colts hate and good moments. We've gone back to being depressing on drafts again. Yeah, Colts. I was saying this to you before. The Colts are one of those teams that every time we play them, I just have constant dread. And I think that's because I went through way too many years of Peyton Manning and Andrew Luck. But you know, we've won five of the last six against them. So in recent years, it is a lot better for us. I still think that 2019 season, I think we beat them quite comfortably. Was that away from home as well? Yeah, away from home, sort of 31-17, I think it was. Seems to remember that one. I think that was the Khalif Raymond touchdown in the fourth quarter.
Oh, that was such a good throw. We were exciting at that point. Offensively, fun to watch. Really, like, just would go for those. That was like on third down late in the game with the lead. Yeah, screw it. He's open. He's faster than them. Let's throw it to him.
Yeah. That's what I've missed about. Like watching the game on Sunday, I'm going to go back to the Carolina game very quickly, but watching that game on Sunday, it kind of just felt very, very conservative. The part of the game that I was most enthusiastic about our offense was right before halftime when there was 30 odd seconds left on the clock, and they actually went to get those 3 points.
Yeah.
So many other weeks this year, and not even this year, and in other seasons, in the last couple of seasons, they just kneel that down or just have a quick run with Spears or someone, and then go to halftime. The fact they went to get those points and gave Folk the opportunity and he then got those points, which actually turned out to be arguably quite important, really. I mean, it would have been if they hadn't got those points after the Panthers scored, it would have been a 4-point game, which just, again, from a momentum perspective, you don't feel like you're so far behind. You never know what's going to happen. But that for me I was so happy we did that. And I even tweeted it on Sunday saying that, just to see a little bit of aggression in the offense to go and be like, you know what, we've got this left. I can't remember how many timeouts we had. I think maybe one or two. We didn't have many. So I think we lost that challenge, which was, by the way, was definitely not a catch.
That was ludicrous again. Why are we getting back to this?
I don't know, but that was the best. That was the best. Honestly, the best part of that first half. Even though we'd had those two touchdown drives, one was a short drive, obviously. The other one was pretty well worked and did well to get it into the end zone. But that was honestly one of the best parts for me, to get those 3 points before the end of the half. And that's what I want to see more of. I just want to see us not just. I appreciate we've got an offensive line that can't give Levis loads and loads of time, but I just want to go and see us have a bit of fun with it and shoot it down the field like we did against Atlanta. Like against Atlanta, we went out and just went, if there's an open opportunity downfield, we're going to go for it. And I didn't feel like that we did that on Sunday. And I want to see that again against the Colts. Let's just go for it. What have you got to lose? And no one's going to care about Levis's, stat lines. If he throws a couple of picks down the field, I'm not bothered about that. I'd much rather him do that than try and. I mean, there's been a couple of occasions where he's tried to kind of get the ball away when he's under a massive amount of pressure and nearly put it straight into their hands. I remember the Tampa game where he was very fortunate not to be picked off, and the Jags game as well. So I'd much rather him do that, like the end of the Pittsburgh game when obviously we went for it then. Don't mind him getting picked off if you're going to try and do something with it. But the second half just felt like it was just too predictable. So against the Colts, I just think, just go for it. Just go and try and enjoy it. Go and try and make some plays. Go and try and upset them. And, everyone wants to beat the Colts. No one wants to lose to the Colts. Even if you are a Titans fan who thinks, oh, I want to lose out the rest of the season to get the highest pick, you won't be saying that come Sunday when you see the Colts running onto the field.
Exactly. Well, what will be, I'm obviously crossing my fingers. Apart from anything else, Nate, and any other Colts fan that you might know, they'll be unbearable if they sweep us this year. And those broom gifts, we can't allow that. So just however it happens, just please can we beat them?
You can't get swept by Gardner Minshew and being taken seriously, can you? So.
No. Absolutely right. Okay. Quick bit of non-Titans related, I guess, before we finish. It's been, I don't know how many episodes since you've been on. You've had some travel. You've been on aeroplanes and dealt with Florida men and women, I imagine. So this, I imagine, there's something you want that to get off your chest.
Yeah, I'm going to talk about hotels and how hotels. I've noticed this a lot recently. So you know they have those in hotels. They'll have those bottles of water, and it will say these cost $2 each, whatever it may be. So we were in a hotel for a couple of nights, right at the end of our trip, because we went off to Knoxville to watch some college football, and then we came back to Nashville for a couple of nights. And I said to Jesse, I was like, guarantee you they charge us for those waters, even though we're not even going to have anyone coming into the room for housekeeping before we check out, because we're only there for literally two nights. I said, I guarantee you it will be on our bill. Went to leave the hotel on Monday. And I said, yeah, checking out room XYZ. And they said, yeah, no problem. I said, oh, is everything all done? Nothing, no charges, nothing. Yep, yeah, you're all set. Okay, cool. Literally, I was packing the car up and got an email receipt. I thought, I'll quickly have a look. Guess what they charged me? Charged me for two bottles of water. Two bottles of water, which were still in the room, and two bottles of water that they had no idea could have been gone, unless they have sensors that sit on top of the
well, so
the
mini, top some have. Of those mini bars do.
Some of the mini bars do, but these were just sat on the top, so they can't all even right. use that excuse. These are definitely, and it's, I don't know if it's like a ploy where, because there'll be enough people who just think, oh, I can't even be bothered to argue this. Just, yeah, it's like $4 at the end of the day, it's nothing. If they did that with everybody, though, they'd be making an absolute killing. They've got hundreds of rooms in each of their hotels. You can imagine it's just a little ploy for them to make a load of extra money. I am one of those people who was like, no, I'm going to go and tell them. So luckily it got removed from mine. But I can just imagine so many people out there.
What was their reaction later? What was their reaction when
their reaction was, oh yeah, it was for the water from the room. They suggested it's still in there. And then they were like, oh, then someone must have put it in that house. Must have put it down for the wrong room or something. I was like, not even close to buying it. But yeah, I don't know what it's a really weird thing that I've noticed a lot more. Like we had the same thing when we dropped our car off. So we had a problem with the rental car that we had. I mean, again, don't get too boring here, but we basically had to return the first car that we had because there was an issue with it. But and then they let us have another car, and off we went. And then when we dropped that back in, we said to the guy, and we're like, oh, can we just check? There's no charges on there. All is set. You know, we obviously returned it full. Everything was good. He's like, yeah, no problem. That's fine. As we're walking through, get an email, been charged like $12.50 or something. I was like, oh, it doesn't tell you what it's for. Just says this is a charge. It's like, brilliant. Okay. So I went up there and said, why? Turned out it's because we didn't return the car that was faulty, full of petrol. So they basically charged us like $12.50 for next to no petrol that we'd used and a convenience charge for the right of it. And I'm like, come on, like the car was faulty. What do you want me to do? Like literally the if I'd carried on driving it for another 20 minutes, probably would have had a flat tire, that kind of problem. You really think I'm going to stop off and get you $3 worth of petrol that I'd used? So yeah,
which you'd only use to leave the rental car place and come back
to leave the rental place, and then yeah, exactly. We'd literally use the car, probably done about 25 miles.
That is outrageous.
I know, it's just like just so many. But again, you can just imagine so many people who don't even look at the receipt 3 days later realize they had the charge and just thought, oh, I can't be bothered. Like, I can't be bothered to argue it. They're just making so much money out of this. It's just like, I see what you're doing. I see you. Yeah, crazy.
The thing with the waters reminds me of a couple of years ago, we stayed in this hotel room for a night in Italy, and I can't remember why, but we got an upgrade to like a suite of some sort. But it had not just a mini bar, but there was loads of food items, like snacking, like bags of crisps, fruit, all sorts of bits and pieces. You virtually make a meal from it if you wanted. And there was, but displayed in the room was a price list, like a mini bar price list, and all this stuff, you know, little half or a third size tub of Pringles, €3 and stuff. Okay, all right, we won't really have any of this. I fancy a can of Coke. Might have a Coke. Oh, I might have a beer. Had a beer. Thinking, oh, we'll tell them as we check out. So we did. Next morning, we had a can of Coke and I had a Peroni or whatever. Can we pay for those? And at which point they said, oh, no, that was all included in the room you had with the package.
Oh, God.
I was just absolutely spitting feathers.
Got it.
Just thinking of picturing all that stuff just sat there that we could have gorged on the night before. Missed opportunity.
or taken with you, even. I'd have gone back. I'd be like, oh, sorry, I must have left something in the room. Can I just have my room key back?
Yeah, there's somewhat lack of dignity with doing that. But it doesn't sound like you'd have worried. You'd have done it, I guess. But
I've got no dignity left. It's fine. I don't care. I'll argue a $4 charge on my receipt. Just out.
It's a principle, isn't it? Yeah,
it is a principle thing. It's like. I mean, yes, he's worse than I am with that sort of thing, like, to be honest with you. But there's a lot of times I'd probably just be like, yeah, I can't be asked. It's not even worth my time arguing it with them. But it's definitely a principal thing. But I just noticed it. I've noticed it a lot more. I don't know if it's post-COVID or maybe they did it before and maybe just didn't realise it as much. But certainly noticed it a hell of a lot more where they just try this sort of stuff on all the time. Car rental places are the worst. Like, they try to... As when we picked our car up, we booked it for 4 p.m. because we were like, okay, we're going to land at this time. 4 p.m. should be fine. We got there, I think it's like 3:30. And they charge us like a whole day extra to pick up half an hour early. Bearing in mind car rental.
It's only ever units of days with car rental.
And it's like, I'm like, I said to someone like, okay, if I pick it up now and I bring it back half an hour early, are you going to be happy with that? Oh, yeah, that's fine. No worries.
They'll get you for that.
They were like, yeah, that's fine, no worries. I was like, why don't you give me that option instead of waiting for me to read through the million T's and C's on your screen and me seeing the charge? It's like, come on, man, Jesus Christ. I was like, also, I mean, the last time we went, we were stood in a queue waiting for 4 hours for a rental car, so you owe me anyway. So stop being absolute arsehats about it and just move on. But, it's one of those things that just I've noticed a hell of a lot more, like sneaky little... whether it's bottles of water or petrol that you've supposedly not put it in a faulty car, or just anything they can do to charge you a few extra quid. And I can just imagine they must be doing it with hundreds of thousands of people.
I've been screwed by rental car companies in the past. I've had battles in the past that I've generally ended up winning because I've been in a riot, where they make up fake damage and try and bill you for it, even though it was anytime I pick up and drop off a rental car, I'm going round it, filming the entire bodywork underneath everywhere. Yeah. And that's a routine. As ridiculous as it looks, I will do that every single time. But there's the last couple of times I've hired a car, there's been like something unusual extra when you pick it up. So obviously you make the booking first and you probably pay when you make the booking, and there's always something new that they'll come up with when you pick it up to charge you. So I've had breakdown cover. When has breakdown cover not been included when you hire a car? I've had to pay that additionally. And then the last time I think a cross-border charge that wasn't advertised. So I don't know how many times I've flown to Germany to then hire a car and drive to Austria and go and see my sister there. And I could think of like maybe every other time I normally tell them, because like they insurance thing. And they just, oh yeah, that's fine. Anywhere in the Schengen area is fine. But the last time, and I think you could, when you book it, you'd normally check these things, and it's oh, and I hadn't even said anything, and it was the guy said, oh, are you taking it across the border at all? And I went, yeah, we go to Austria, maybe Italy, and he was like, oh, that'll be like €25 or something. So what? I've literally hired a car from you in this office before. That wasn't the case before. Oh no, that's because it's €25. They just think that you can't be arsed. And what are you going to do? Stand there and argue for half an hour?
Loads of people won't. Everyone will just be like, oh yeah, whatever.
You're tired. You just got off a flight. The last thing you want to do is have those battles. Although trying to scroll through the email confirmation to check I got it right. And it's just painful. But I think it's just desperation. It's just desperation to squeeze every little bit of last bit of money out of people. Yeah. This is the world we live in.
Unfortunately,
I haven't even got to mine.
I thought you had the same one as me.
Well, I just enjoyed it. I'm just joining in. Okay, just very quickly. Just a bit of some musing I've had. It's cold in England this week, and certainly in the southeastern corner of England. Frosts, bit of fog, barely getting above freezing during the day. So I'm scraping my car in the morning and evening. That's how bleak it is. Just commenting on the different types of frost that you scrape off. Why is it that sometimes it's just like one scrape, gone. It's nice and clean. It's satisfying. It goes. And then sometimes you're hacking away and you're just getting nowhere. And there's like several layers of frost. There's probably a technical answer to this, the different types of dew that freeze or whatever it is. But I've had some mornings this week where lose the will to live and you're scraping and scraping and scraping. Maybe de-ice is the answer, but I hate de-icer. It's just a tough old world.
Surely that's just like levels of coldness, no? Or are you saying it's been like the same temperature and it's been different?
No, I think it could be. I don't know if it's how quickly it freezes or like maybe if it's rained. I don't think it's rained this week, but like sometimes, do you know what I mean? Like sometimes it looks more opaque.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I know what you mean. Maybe it's like a humidity thing. Maybe there's like a slightly difference in humidity, even though humidity is, when it's freezing cold, is more or less redundant, I guess. But there's got to be some technical answer to this. I'm sure some smart ass will know.
If you let me know on Discord or at AD Foxcroft or at Transatlantic TN, tag your tweet, Frostwatch. I would like to know the answer.
Frostwatch. Don't think that's going to get trending anytime soon.
I don't think I'm going to get any tweets or messages on this subject, I would imagine.
There's bound to be one person who's like a proper geek with this kind of thing and just thinks, oh, yeah, I know the answer to this.
Even if you don't know, post something. Just so I know that somebody's listened to the end of this thing.
Just tweet hashtag Frostwatch. Let's just do that. Frostwatch. I can't even say it, but let's just tweet that. Even if you have no idea what the answer is, we'll keep an eye on that hashtag.
Oh, a bit of breaking news before we go off the air, that I have misread. Hold on. Oh no. Oh, that's a shame. I thought we'd been flexed out of Monday Night Football, but I've got the wrong week. So maybe we still
get. No breaking news whatsoever.
No breaking. Well, it is breaking news if you're a fan of other teams, but no, this is the following week's week 15. Monday Night Football has been flexed and changed, but we are playing, I think, week 14 in Miami. As far as I know,
that's I could do with that one getting flexed as well, to be honest, because I don't really think I want to stay out until 4:30 in the morning watching us getting absolutely pummeled.
I had a brief moment of optimism where I thought that might be back to 6 p.m. on Sunday with Andrew Catalon, but no, it's not to be. Right, let's get out of here. I look forward to all those Frostwatch tweets. By the way, if you're one of the 13 people, according to Spotify Wrapped, 13 people have us as their number one podcast. Can you imagine that?
Ooh. This week we could have like a little quiz here and like try and guess the 13, couldn't we?
Well, there's no way of finding out, as far as I can tell. It all looks a bit like made up data. But
I think I know who six of them are.
Well, I don't think I'm one. I don't know how it works. I don't know how it works it out. But so 13 of you have us as, maybe you just don't listen to anything else, which is really worrying. If you're one of those 13, you're probably listening to the point where you can give me advice on Frost.
We'll definitely be getting 13 hashtag Frostwatch. If we've got 13 top listeners, they're the ones who listen to the very end.
Yeah. I definitely hope so. Right, let's be done. Let's be having you. Let's be beating those Colts. Tighten up, Oiler up.
Tighten up.
Colt down. Colt down.
That sounds like a quarterback who's going to get drafted in 2028. Colt down. First overall.
Mr. Irrelevant.